Now, every so often, we happen upon somebody with a very interesting and unusual job. Kieran Stanley designs zoos. I've never met a zoo designer before. He's originally from Clahean in County Cork, and he joins us now from his office in Germany. How are you doing, Kieran?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Thanks for taking time out. You're a busy man.
No problem.
How does one become a zoo designer?
I guess accidentally.
Is it right?
Everything in life, yeah, you fall into things and either you like it or you don't, and then you keep on if you like it. I landed in Hanover in Germany about 1994 after calling a friend of mine after finishing college. And I started working with a practice there that they just got the job. They were commissioned to do the master planning in Hanover, the zoo. And
right.
It became, I guess I fell into it, fell in love with it, because it wasn't just about the architecture. It was about, you know, everything involved in the actual task of designing a zoo. So it's landscape, it's about narrative communication design. It's about taking the visitors on a journey, you know, to Africa, to India, and this kind of thing. So it became a kind of a mix between architecture and scenography, if you will.
What's that second word you used?
Scenography.
What is scenography when it's at home?
Something that those who would be in the theatre, if you're looking, let's say, sitting in the rangs of the theatre and you're looking up and what you see in front of you is somebody's given it thought about what it can look like.
Okay.
What we can,
yes.
It's
yeah.
Basically, it's a form of design, if you will.
Ah, yeah. So because I didn't give much thought to zoo design until today, but in thinking
right.
about it, you have to satisfy a lot of things, don't you? They're like, you know, the animals, obviously, their safety and to make sure they're comfortable. And then, of course, us who come to see the
right.
animals. And so all of that has to be married together in a very clever way. And that's your job.
And the operations.
So and the operations, right. Oh, you didn't think about that. So the feeding of the animals when we're gone or even when we're there.
And caretaking. So it's the animal welfare, basically. There's the zoo. There's usually over about 100 or 200 employees in any middle to large-sized zoo. So that's actually their place of work, and they're looking after the animals, and there's the animals who live there, and then there's the visitors.
Right.
So it's a kind of, yeah, triumvirate of
needs.
Of clients.
Yeah, yeah,
needs,
yeah.
Yeah.
So in the time you've been working, which is probably close on 30 years now, working in various zoos around the world, I'd say you've seen a big change in zoo design.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, well, I grew up in Cork, but we used to go up to Dublin quite often. And,
yeah.
I mean, Dublin Zoo at that time, I remember coming away crying and thinking, you know, I don't think, you know, that's right, the way we're looking at animals behind cages. And they're on exhibition. So I guess there is a huge change. I mean, it's definitely a quantum leap in the right direction towards, you know, giving the animals the amount of space and the needs and the environmental enrichment that they need and want. And at the same time, we as visitors have a subjective idea as well that it's, I mean, if the more, I guess you can't tell if an animal is happy or not.
No.
But you can if they're reproducing and procreating. That's usually a good sign. But subjectively, obviously, we think the animal is sad if they're locked up and if they're kept in small spaces. So I guess, you know, somehow it's my job to try to give as much back to the animals as possible and try to somehow take the visitors on a journey there
yeah.
and allow them to engage with the animals as much as possible.
And of course, and this is a truism, but I'm going to say it anyway, that you can't ask animals what they want. You know, where would you like that pond? Where, you know, you
well,
can't... But
you can, in a way, by observing
yes.
the natural environment. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
by,
yeah.
You can observe natural environments. We can take a lot from nature and transfer. So
okay.
That's what we do. Which we, you know, we try to include as much as possible from as far as the natural environment goes.
Talk to us about the panda, because the panda is famously difficult to get to procreate, etc. Which suggests that they're probably not happy in captivity. But you've designed two panda enclosures, which is mm-hmm. one more than anybody else in the world. Is that correct?
Correct. One
yes.
is in South Korea, one is in Berlin. Well, yeah, I mean, they have a window of opportunity of 72 hours a year where they can... It's a bit like a marriage.
I'd like to distance myself from that last comment.
I'll probably get a slapping now when I get home. But it's basically, it's not that they're not happy there. They're very particular. They're very picky about their partners and their moods and their mood swings. And if it doesn't line up, then there's nothing going to happen.
So how does that colour your design then? that knowledge?
Well, basically, you design it so that they can, if the time comes, if suddenly there are signals that she is willing and he is able, then it has to be designed in such a way that they can come together basically very easily and simply.
Right.
So I guess it's about flexibility of the design of the enclosures and of the areas and the environment.
Fascinating, yeah. Which is, we'll leave the panda aside now, apart from the panda, which is the most difficult animal to design for when you're designing a zoo?
Yeah, there's a few up there. We're designing an Asian rhino environment right now in the Berlin Zoo, and they're obviously huge animals.
Yeah.
With a huge amount of strength, so there's a lot of steel and reinforced concrete going in there. But with regard to complexity, and it would probably be the polar bear. Polar bear is very, very difficult. At the same time, you can give him a lot. In Hanover, for instance, there's a wave machine that in salt water. We've got fish in there, which it doesn't work in the UK. You can't really use fish as an environmental enrichment element. But in the Hanover Zoo...
Why not?
There's different laws.
Different laws, okay.
Certain countries have certain laws with regard to feeding live animals or fish to other animals.
Okay.
For instance, in Germany, it doesn't really apply. And so there's a great amount of environmental enrichment elements that we were able to weave into the enclosure, and you could see that they're really using them and playing with them. And so I think we have to really be very clever in what we can give back to their environments and make sure that they're really being challenged, is the word. That it's not giving them a comfort five-star hotel. It's more the opposite. We need to try to understand how to challenge their abilities and then need to weave that in.
And of course, all the time thinking about, we want to see them doing whatever they're doing. So,
well, that's why you're put on a boat underneath the water in Hanover, for instance. Yeah.
So the polar bear swimming above you, is he? Or she?
Yeah, there's two of them. Yeah, they're in the water, and above you are penguins because they're on board the boat, and then there's seals on the other side of you, so you're completely surrounded by animals.
Wow.
In a quite a spectacular way, actually. Yeah, that was a project that we spent a lot of time trying to solve that one.
Right. Look, we've run out of time, unfortunately, because this is a fascinating topic. Kieran Stanley, architect and zoo designer, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Thanks, Kieran.
You're very welcome, Ray.
Thank you. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.